Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today, I want you to meet Tommy Breedlove. He is a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestselling author of a book that I'm really enjoying reading called Legendary. And he is the founder of the Legendary Life Movement, a movement that empowers driven people to be professionals in leadership, business, mindset, and their relationships. Tommy challenges high achievers to stop chasing the ghost of more and when and lean into the legendary leaders, spouses, and humans they were born to be. Tommy, welcome to the show today.
Jonathan, my man, if this interview is anything like our first 10 minutes and our first interview, it's going to be epic, brother. I'm just so happy to be here and thank you.
Yeah, I started my coaching career with a business and life coaching focus. Business coaching was what I led with because it seemed to be what people really wanted. And so it was like 80% business and 20% life coaching. But and then I wrote my book, as you probably are aware, that's for family businesses and how to, next generation leaders. And it's like a playbook. But if I could have written a life coaching book, I would have put my name on your book. And I would have said, hey, this is my book. Congratulations. It's a really awesome book. It's really refreshing. I mean, it's filled with a lot of stuff that I've seen maybe in other places, but you put such a fresh, energizing spin. You're an energetic person. So I'd love to take us back to where you were like maybe 10 years ago in your corporate career and how you came to the moment that led you to this and this book and this business.
I appreciate you. So let's go back even a little bit before that, because I was the first person who went into a professional life. What does that mean? I was the first person in my family to go to college. I was the first person pretty much to leave that neighborhood and to go make something of myself. And so I chose the path. I became an accountant and I worked at companies like Deloitte and similar, think public accounting, financial consulting, and mergers and acquisitions. That was my life. And I thought that was going to be my life. And so I was 36 years old, a junior partner. I had left Deloitte, but I was in a very large middle market firm running an international practice. 36 years old, shiny suit, cufflinks. Man, you just said this guy's on the rise. He's got it all going on. And I was wearing all of this armor and masks, because I never dealt with anything from my youth. And so what did that look like? It looked like a very arrogant guy, which is just insecurity on steroids. Mm-hmm. It looked like the fun guy, the life of the party guy, guy that wouldn't ask for help. And I was the ye who turns the lights off last wins kind of guy. And when the money, the power, the status, and the success, and I believe all of those things are very important, especially to ambitious, driven entrepreneurs and executives, which is the space you and I play. You play in the entrepreneurial space.
Yep.
I think all of those things are important. But when none of those made me happy, because I wasn't truly being me, I wasn't living in a self-loving, self-confident, self-respect, the noise in my head, the story I was telling myself was very loud. And wow. I believe that story. And when I didn't get lit up by all of the shiny things, that's where I turned to think of the Wolf of Wall Street type lifestyle. And at 37 years old, I was probably doing some multi-million dollar M&A or audit the week before in some boardroom somewhere. I ended up in a ditch in downtown Atlanta, wondering how the hell did I get here, looking up at the sky. And I'm like, this was my second chance in life, by the way. I got in a bunch of trouble when I was 18. I grew up in and around a lot of abuse and violence. And at 18, I became that abuse and violence. So I got in a lot of trouble then. Did some time. Luckily, it was a misdemeanor. But what I realized at that aha moment, I don't know if I'm going to get a number three.
Wow.
And so I decided to just make me my full-time job for a while, find out who Tommy is, find some self-confidence, self-love, self-respect, stand in quiet power, be the leader, man, human, husband you wanted to be, because I basically had almost burned down Rome yet a second time. And when I made me my full-time job, I'll tell you the tangible results that happened in 3 years. I never planned on leaving that world. I was a junior partner.
Right.
But when I started making me my full-time job, putting my leading myself first, this is what it looked like tangibly. I went from junior partner to senior partner to shareholder, owner of the firm, and elected to the board of directors in 3 years. My money doubled. My network 10X'd. I removed all the negative people in my life and added all positives. And so all of those tangible things happened by just putting me first in 3 years. And here I am, you know, most of the board members are in their 60s. Here I am at 39 years old, helping run the company. And, but here's the most important thing is I found peace of mind, fulfillment, courage, patience, presence. I went from literally 70 hour weeks, probably down to 39. And it was about quality, not quantity. And so I found all these things. And that's when my network, mostly entrepreneurs, I was in the middle market space. My clients were 10 million of 750, mostly privately held companies. But all of these executives and entrepreneurs and bankers and M&A folks and venture capital, I started reaching out like, hey, man, let's grab a beer. Hey, let's go for a walk. Hey, can we get coffee? And I thought we were going to like network and connect and do some business together. And they're like, no, man. Tell me what you did. You're just a different human being. You seem calmer. You seem happier. Your marriage, everybody, the whole world could see that our marriage was crumbling. It went from like life support to stable to really supportive. And they just started reaching out to me for help. And eventually I realized there's a business here. And people are like, you got to write that book, man. You got to write that book, man. You got to write a book. And I eventually wrote a book. And because I think what you said, it's simple, it's fun, it's actionable. You can do it. And it's short. And I think that's why it's done. It hit the Wall Street in USA Today, but it's changed my whole life. I resigned my equity and went to build this legendary life movement. And we're in the retreat experience and executive and entrepreneur space. And we've never looked back, brother. So thank you for letting me share that.
No, that's awesome. At first, when you were telling the story, I thought you quit your job and did 3 years of like solo journey. And I'm thinking most people would be listening to this saying like, Tommy, I can't, like, I need a source of income to do that.
I did too. I didn't quit.
Okay. So you kept at it, which was probably really challenging because you had, you know, this fast paced lifestyle and all of a sudden, suddenly whatever was that led you to the ditch, whether it was drugs or alcohol, that's usually the path for some, most people is you dug into yourself and you dug into working on yourself. And you must have had guides. You must have had mentors. You probably did workshops. You did some of that,
A lot of, to this day, I mean, I am in the experience coaching and mentoring business. To this day, I run masterminds. I am in a mastermind of 8 men. I do coaching of executives and entrepreneurs. I have a coach. I'm working with 2 right now. And honestly, so some of those demons from my past don't come up and get, you know, that voice inside our head that says all sorts of terrible things to us. I work with a Buddhist therapist as well. She's like working with Yoda, man. It's like the coolest thing. It's like the coolest thing ever. But so yes, I still do the work. And what's amazing is so many people were trying to help me before that. My wife and I were going through, here's the truth. My wife and I were going through marriage counseling.
Yeah.
And I remember the marriage counselor saying, there's a place in Tennessee that can do more for you in 7 days than I can do in 10 years. But I was too close. I wasn't ready to hear it. I just thought if I worked harder and crushed it and made more money and did more deals and, you know, and I was going to be happy. It was win and more, right? But I realized wherever you go, there you are. And it didn't matter, you know, money's a magnifying glass. If you're miserable, it's going to magnify that misery. If you want to make impact, it's going to magnify that impact. And when I woke up in that ditch, I remember, and I called him that day and I said, I don't know where that place is, but get me in and get me signed up. And my first true mentor, really second mentor in my life appeared at that place. And just from mentors to coaches to master, I mean, I invest heavily in me so that I can invest heavily in others.
Yeah. Well, they say the mentor shows up when you are ready.
That's right.
I remember reading a book when I was, I was 20, I think, by Sheldon Kopp called When You Meet the Buddha on the Road, Kill Him. And it was basically that, like, when you, like, the mentor shows up, but then, like, you have to beat your own demons and stuff like that was what I think the book was about. So
we all have them, and we all have them. I don't care who you are.
Yes. Absolutely.
Where you sit on the chain of success and status. Yep. We've all got stuff. We just got to own it, do something about it, look in the mirror, take action, and move forward.
Yeah. So I want to cover two topics next. One, I'm going to come back to this second, which is the five keys to living a legendary life or be a leader. But let's talk about the change process. You referenced Gay Hendricks' book, The Big Leap. And the question I think you pose is, like, when is it time for a change? So How do you know when it's time for a change? Some people I know, personal people that I know personally, that, like, they would seemingly have hit rock bottom a long time ago, and yet they keep bouncing along the bottom. Other entrepreneurs that I know, they're stuck. They're difficult to coach. They believe the world is the way it is, and the business is the way it is. And it's difficult for them to change. So when do you think it's time for a change?
It starts with a feeling. And you know what you're feeling inside. And here's the truth. No one can save you, whether you're stuck in business, life, a relationship, or don't have a relationship, or unhappy. Really the only power, it comes with a feeling. And the truth is, we like to think we're in control. We're not in control of anything. The only thing we're in control of is our choices. So if there's an area in your life that you are unfulfilled, unhappy, or not as successful in, go find the nearest mirror, look in it. That's the problem, the solution. But you have to choose to do something differently than you did the day before in business, in life, in leadership. And the number one failure in leadership in life is self-awareness, knowing thyself.
Right. Interesting. That's where I started my coaching, was like, that was the first chapter, was like, know thyself.
Know thyself. And here's the key for everybody. So it starts with a feeling and then making a choice to change. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, but it's so much better than whatever area you're lacking in right now. Mm-hmm. But here's what I want everybody to hear that we're so caught up in, is you're not alone. If you're dealing with it, whether it's business, life, transition, money, relationships, unhappiness, whatever it is, millions are dealing with it, including the guys, these two guys talking here. The difference is we chose to change and continue growing every single day. I read incessantly. I work with coaches. I sharpen my pencil because I don't have it all figured out. And I just want to be a little bit better each and every day. So it starts with a feeling. You know what area in your life you're down in, whatever it might be, or you're stuck in, or there might be something you need to eliminate. Look in the mirror, make a choice, ask for help, and know once you ask for help, it's the most freeing thing in the world. It could be like, I'm 2 million in rev. I need to get to 10, but I keep doing the same things to stay at 2. It can be something simple like that. The easiest thing to fix is business and profit. That's the easiest. The hardest thing to fix and lead is ourselves.
Right.
So choose to make a change is what I would say.
So let's talk about these five keys to legendary leadership. What do you see they are? How did you settle on five?
I'll tell you, in my opinion, what they are. And this was taught to me, and I just tend to agree. So the great Darren Hardy, I don't know if you know who he is.
I do.
He's fantastic, especially from a business and leadership standpoint. I love his work. I love his content. And they are as follows. It starts with confidence. Mm-hmm. So people follow confident people.
Right.
Not arrogant people.
Right.
Arrogance is loud and insecure. They follow confident people. And confidence is two things. And this is the hardest. The easiest of the two is working the craft. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly running retreats and experiences and working and coaching and working with coaches. I'm constantly getting good at my craft. That's confidence, shooting the hoops, hitting the golf ball, whatever it might be, doing it over and over again. It's the practice. It's the doing the reps. That's one part of confidence. The hardest part of confidence, the second hardest part, is self-confidence, self-respect, self-love, self-confidence, self-esteem. That is cultivated every single day, A, with working with other people, but doing the reps on our heart, mind, and soul muscles as well. It's just like going to the gym. If we're not working on our heart, minds, and souls, it atrophies. If we're working on it, it gets strong. So the confidence is number one. It's both doing the reps and self-confidence. That's number one.
All right. So let me just pause you there for a second. We'll come back to the other four. So that personal confidence, the second part of it, comes from working your affirmations, working your personal mission statement, working your purpose statement, reviewing your core values. You go through all of these things. These are all things that we talk about in business, but life coaches talk about it differently. And I'm not trying to pin you as a life coach, but you are talking about, you know, your personal life and how do you develop those things? Are those the keys?
There's a lot of key. I think it begins and ends with gratitude. I think it begins and ends with mastering your mindset through through intentions, through goal setting, through gratitude. This works for some people. It doesn't work for others. I like meditation because it helps me be proactive and not reactive. I love it. Like I want to be proactive in my life and not react. And just pausing and breathe. It comes with quiet time. It comes with what you have to do is unwire all those messages that we've been taught our entire lives through social media, through news, through parenting, through schooling. We got to stop telling ourselves certain stories. And we all have a voice inside our head that says we're not something good enough, strong enough, fast enough, rich enough, good looking enough, whatever. Right. We all have it. Some is lowering that voice down and fixing it. And you do it affirmations, intentions, gratitude, reading.
Right. If
people who don't read are no better than those who can't. And also, I forgot what I said there, but meditating, there's a thousand different practices to make you mentally, emotionally. And if it's important to you, I'm not talking religion, spiritually strong. So those are the keys there.
So let's just digress for another moment. I think you're so intentional about creating yourself. And, you know, when I think of people who are really intentional about creating themselves, I think of, and many of us probably think of Tony Robbins because he's kind of a legend. And
he is a legend.
Really
that's legendary.
Right.
He's a legend.
And he's created himself, right? So pretty amazing. Some people might argue like, hey, I don't have time for this and stuff like that. And you and I both agree on this, which is that this is the work of the first part of the day, the morning, before you start your workday, before you dive into your email. And like I'm as guilty as the next guy looking at my phone first thing in the morning, or looking at the stock market or whatever was going on. But the truth is that stuff is a lot of just noise that I can get to later. And this other stuff is about being really intentional. And so I just want to give a plug for your book again, legendary Tommy Breedlove, USA Today bestseller, Wall Street Journal bestseller. It's so good. It's so refreshing. So, all right.
Thank you, brother. And I'll give you the other keys. I will say this. The number one investment you can make is in yourself.
Yeah.
There's nothing like standing with your shoulders back and head up. There's nothing like truly giving and feeling love. There's nothing like being happy, experiencing joy and rest. And honestly, having great relationships with friends or sex with your spouse, whatever it is, that investment in yourself, getting strong in your heart, getting strong in your mind, and getting strong in your soul, and standing with your head up, there's no better feeling in the world, and it will make you more successful. I guarantee it.
Look, this is a forum for you because, like, talking about this in an M&A boardroom would be, you'd be like a social pariah. It would be like, who is this guy?
Oh, my partners used to tease me nonstop, and we did a lot. I've probably done 60 M&A transactions in the billions of dollars, which really means nothing. But at the end of the day, they used to say, well, let's go find Tommy. I'm sure he's standing on his hands with a candle in his butt. And I wasn't doing any of that.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't doing any of that stuff.
Right.
But the truth is, from success to happiness, even if I would have stayed in that industry, I would have been tremendously more successful than those people. And I'm not being arrogant, just because I was doing the work on me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when having that kind of discipline, but I think just the confidence thing alone is huge.
Huge.
And
huge.
I'm going to go back and reread it because there's parts for me that are missing, especially in that second part. It's big. And I think self-doubt, self-criticism, these are things that I was raised with, and they're part of my, my DNA. It's hard to get rid of that stuff.
It gets wired in you. And we believe the story that was told to us, even down at our soul level, we start to believe it, but it can be unwired. It just takes time, work, and patience.
Yeah. Well, we make up the story a lot of times too. I mean,
it's not true.
It is our, you know, it's our story. And it's like, okay, are you sticking with that story or are you open to changing it? So,
yeah, I love what Brene Brown says. You can write the ending to your story any day you want to.
Okay. There you go. I like that. All right. So
do you want me to go back to the five keys of leadership?
Second key. Yep.
Yeah. Optimism.
Okay.
If you're a negative Nelly, nobody in the world is going to follow you.
Yep.
If the glass is half full or you're a victim or entitled, no one's going to follow you. So it's optimism. And that speaks for itself. You got to be optimistic and people follow optimistic people. Even during COVID, where we lost 60% of our revenue in a day, went into the closet for like 16 seconds, screamed, maybe cried a little bit and came out, talked to the team, said, we got this. Let's go kick ass and be world class. And what do we need to do to make the step forward? And we did. So optimism.
Right.
Number three is authenticity. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about emotionally vomiting on people that you see on social media.
Right.
I'm talking about sharing wisdom and not advice and letting people know they're not alone and walking with them. It's asking, authenticity is asking for help. Authenticity is sharing wisdom. Oh, key employee, I have been there. I did what you were doing. You're not alone. I've experienced that. Now, here's what I did to go forward. They know they're not alone and they know you're walking shoulder to shoulder with them.
Yep.
It's being authentic, asking for help, and just being who you are. People are craving. Everybody's tired of the LinkedIn success and the Instagram fabulous. No one gives a hoot. I will just say it that way. I'll keep it clean. Mm-hmm. So authenticity with number three.
Which is like an interesting thing, by the way, because if you're ever a member of the Entrepreneurs Organization, they teach you that you need to speak from gestalt, which is from your experience. And I noticed in my coaching, I made a shift from teaching them stuff that I knew from the book, or I knew from, maybe mostly from the book, I would say. And there's several books that I might have pulled from. But it was when I spoke from my experience and having been there that people listened more intently.
Totally. 100%. People are craving authenticity. We're just because we're not getting it in our politics. We're not getting it in our religions. And we're definitely not getting our media and social media. It's just it's all bull BS. So that's the third one. The fourth one is consistency.
Mm-hmm.
How you do anything is how you do everything. And one of the worst things you cannot do is show up for yourself and show up for others, thinking your time is more important than other people's time. So consistency, how you do anything is how you do everything. And so we've got to honor our commitments. We've got to show up for ourselves. We've got to show up for others. And we've got to walk the walk. You can't just talk the talk. If you say people are important, then you're canceling all the meetings on them because your time is more important. That's a cancer that's going to eat you from the inside out.
Yeah.
And so consistency, showing up for yourself, showing up for others, honoring your word, standing and being consistent day to day. Don't be all over the place and just stay consistent. Now, you might have to learn and grow and pivot. That's okay. That's part of the process, but be consistent and show up.
Yeah.
And the final thing, and I allude to this in the book, and I believe this with all my heart, is you got to work in your zone of brilliance.
Yeah, 100%.
Which will help you with control, perfectionism. It'll help you be more happy, more profitable. It's where your God-given talents meet the things that that you love to do. Like, if it doesn't fall in these three areas, I don't do it. And I've got a person that I could bring over and confirm this. If I'm not writing content, working the craft, what does that mean? Public speaking, coaching, running my executive retreats, the experiences, if I'm not working the craft, or evangelizing the movement, you know, championing what we do and why we do it. Mm-hmm. That's networking. That's connecting. That's business development. I love talking about what we do because I would buy this. I do it because I love it. And so if it's not in those three areas, I don't do it. That's my zone of brilliance. And I have really good operators, really good executors, really good administration and world-class finance because this is the world I came from. I don't even do that. I came from that world.
Right.
And so I surround myself with people in their zone of brilliance. And we're always sharpening the pencil to figure out where that is too, and making sure we have the right team in place. So if you can stay 4 hours there, you will be more profitable, more happy.
Let's talk about that because I think that's a big area that I talk about with all my clients. The question I think for a lot of people is how do they find it? And so I have two exercises. I'm wondering what you offer people. So one of my tools I've been using since I started coaching in 2004 is vital few, trivial many. You know, like strategic focus. And it's just basically listing all the things. It, literally, you could keep a journal, a diary, whatever, of what you did, and then maybe put an hourly rate next to it. 100%. You know, and what would you like think, like, what do you want to be worth and what are you paying yourself? If there's a gap or delta between that and what is on your trivial many, then folks, you're stealing either money from your business or you're putting in extra hours to make up for it. So that's kind of an eye opener when people see like, oh my God, I'm stealing money from my company or I'm putting extra time in. So that works.
Stealing money from your people, yep. stealing money from your happiness, stealing from your craft, your creativity.
Yeah.
Like you're doing all of that. And that's the reason you're probably unfulfilled in what you're doing right now.
But I think it's really hard for people to figure out. I'll speak from my experience. So I think I'm good at a lot of things. And so I think that people who think that they're good at a lot of things, they're the ones who have trouble figuring out what it is that they're really great at, because they specialize in, and Dan Sullivan talks about this in Strategic Coaches, like they specialize in like strengthening their weaknesses rather than strengthening their strengths. And so, you know, this is, I think, is a difficult thing for people who are good at a lot of things, is figuring out, well, what are you really great at and how do you figure that out? And so there's another exercise. It either comes from scaling up system or EOS traction system, where you're looking at how to delegate and elevate. What do you love that you're great at? You know, what's your zone of brilliance or genius? What's your zone of excellence? What's your zone of competence? What's your zone of incompetence? I mean, for most people, they can figure out the incompetence and competence stuff because they know, like, I'm good at that. Like, I'm good at accounting, right? But I don't like, and I don't want
to. I don't like doing it. I'm an amazing financial engineer.
Right.
It bores me to tears.
So then you're like, that's not where you should be.
No.
But like, you're a passionate guy. So people listening to this might be thinking, well, that was easy for Tommy to figure out because he's passionate. He knows what he's passionate about. How do we help others figure out
what I love everything you just said, but here's, all right, this is going to take, you're going to have to grab your, this is intestinal fortitude. What I want to ask your audience to do here.
Okay.
If you don't know what it is, A, you're not alone. That's most. There's two requirements. And what I want you to do is go ask the five most trusted people in your life. Could be, if you're a man, ask your wife. She will be honest with you. I swear. Men won't be honest with their wife. They won't. But the wife will be honest with man.
Right.
So if you're a man, ask your wife for sure. But who are your five most trusted colleagues, the people that you would call your internal board of directors? It could be a network colleague, could be a best friend. It could be somebody you work with. It could be a colleague, could be a subordinate. Ask them, what am I world-class at? What am I truly good at doing? What do people come to me for advice for? Where am I at my best? They will be honest with you. Get their feedback. What you will see is there is a trend. They're all basically going to say the same thing, because wherever you are, wherever you go, there you are. The second step is take all of those wonderful things. By the way, what better affirmation exercise than being told by the people you love what you're really good at doing? That's really cool. Hello, affirmation. Second piece, though, and this is the key. Again, I'm really good at financial engineering. I don't like it. Step two is circle the top three that you like and do that.
Yeah.
You got to like it. They'll tell you what you're world class at.
Right.
And what you want to do is stay laser focused on those three things, but you must like doing them. And here's the thing. Here's the thing about ambitious driven people and entrepreneurs. And A, we love shiny things, but B, we think we can multitask and do it all. And 1 out of 100 people can multitask. Only 1 out of 100, and you're 40% less efficient. So if you stay in those three things, you will be a whole lot more profitable and happy. Promise.
Yeah, it was Peter Drucker who I first read many years ago who said you can't multitask. You could work a few different things, but you can't do them simultaneously. And totally. And I have someone very close to me in my life who can watch a movie on TV, can do online shopping, and is doing some like exercise or writing a text message or composing something, you know, and it's difficult. For people who have ADHD, and you'll know if you have it, if you are trying to do two things at once, you're listening to someone and then you're trying to also write something or read something or do something. I mean, that's not active listening, folks. That is like maybe closer to hearing or maybe not active listening. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I love that. You want to be world-class in what you do. Let's say you want to be world-class husband or world-class spouse or significant other or partner or business person. Mm-hmm. Being present and deep listening, two ears, one mouth, be present and deep listening from sales to business development to relationships to love life to you name it. It will be so much better if you concentrate on those two things, just deep listening and presence.
Yep. All right, let's do a little lightning round here. I never do this, but it seems like fun. You've got so much content in your book. I'll say a phrase and you riff on it, okay? This will be easy for you, right? So if it's not a hell yes, it's a no.
Change your life is the biggest time management thing when it comes to a human being, definitely. If it's not a hell yes, it's a no. That's how you reconquer your time. How you become more happy, become more efficient. And it's also how you fire all those negative Nellies in your life.
Yeah. Okay. Next one is, one I've been using since 20, which is eliminate the word should from your vocabulary.
Most shaming word in the dictionary. We've been talking about every time we tell someone they should do something or it's been told to us, that puts us in a place of power. Like we know what's best for them. And that's nonsense. The shoulds are the shame monsters, by the way. And you talk about that voice inside of our heads when we should ourselves to death, that voice in your head, you know what it is. That is the should monster. That is shame. It's not real. Eliminate the word should. Don't use it because you're shaming someone else unintentionally, but it is the worst word in the English dictionary, in my opinion.
I agree. T. Harv Eker said, actually, the three worst and most dangerous words in the English language are, I know that. And so that's a good one. I love one T. Harv.
You know my favorite T. Harv saying real quickly is if people say money's not important, run from them. They're broke.
Right.
I thought that was cute. That's a T. Harv, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Another one of his is I'd rather be rich than right. So that's one of his. All right, here's one. From a movie I slept through. I saw it on Times Square and fell asleep. It was a midnight showing. It's a quote from Yoda. Do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah, try is a lie. I'll try to do that, especially if you say it to your children or you say it to a colleague or you say it to a spouse, whatever that spouse looks like for you. Try means you won't. Yeah. You're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. If someone says, I will try to do that, they A, don't care about it, B, aren't passionate about it, and B, and C, they're lying. Tries nonsense.
Yeah. All right. I think, last one.
All right.
Participating in your own rescue.
Best advice I ever was given. It was taught to me by a river rafting guide. I was going down the Gali River and it has class 5 rapids, which is river speak before. If you fall in, there's a high probability of bad things happening to you. High probability. And we asked, the first thing he said to us is, if we fall in, what do we do? And he says, follow the light. Well, I didn't like that answer. That means you're drowning. So I said, well, give me a number two. He goes, you must participate in your own rescue. You must turn over, put your feet up, look for a rope. And if all else fails, swim to your rescue because the boat might not be there. Mm. And I thought, holy cow, what an analogy for life. There's nobody, there's no quick fix. There's no drug. There's no solution to this life, except looking in the mirror and know it's both the solution and the problem. But you must participate in your own rescue. No one else can do that for you. So it's the best piece of advice I've ever been given.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So good. So good. So I can't say enough good stuff about your book, about spending time with you, the energy that you give off, the enthusiasm. If you're not watching this on YouTube, you should. You got to see Tommy smile.
Give him a shame monster. Yeah. Give him a should.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. You'll enjoy it. Sorry. Take that. Scratch. Cancel. I really enjoy watching these on YouTube, but I know that most of you probably are listening through your podcast listening app of choice. But check us out on YouTube. There's some good stuff and you get some visuals and you can see the book. You can look at the bookshelves behind us and go, huh, that's a book I want to read. Speaking of which, you have a great, what do we call it? Bibliography index of books that you recommend. It's just great. I mean, the books that you've read blew me away. I thought, man, this guy's a lot younger than me. And he's read a lot more books or maybe I've got mine buried. Or maybe I got 60 pages in and got, nah, it was kind of boring what that guy's going to say, but which was probably my arrogance. Like I couldn't get into that person's thing. But yeah, you've read a lot of books. It's awesome.
I've read a lot of books and I've listened to a lot of books. I love being out in nature. I love walking outside. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not thinking or with a friend or a family member, I'm almost 90% going to be listening to a book or a great podcast like this. And so mm-hmm. I love to learn. I love to grow. And if I like what I'm listening to, I always buy the book, see behind me, mm-hmm. and then highlight. But the key is not to just read, it's to apply. You know, it's intentional right. action. You must, yeah. reading the book's the intention, then you got to take action on it. So I love to read.
Yeah. So one of the books, the first book I was given as a business coach was Becoming a Strategic Business Owner by Daniel Murphy, who started a company called The Growth Coach with a partner who had come out of the strategic coach and thought, wow, we should do group coaching and turn it into a franchise. And what he said was, like, you should read a book and write notes in the margin and the columns and, you know, action steps. It should be dog-eared. It should be yellow tagged. It should be, you know, I got yellow highlights through yours as well. Super great suggestion and makes it really, you know, makes it so you can apply it. Takes That's a lot right. more time to actually get through a book if you're going to be intentional. So,
but yeah. pick one thing, just do one thing.
Yeah.
What's the one thing you need the most from that particular book and do that one thing and do it well.
Yep. All right. So now I got a challenge to you. So we talked about the should and eliminating the should. And then you had one exception to the should, if you remember in your book, and that's around having a personal mission or statement, I believe. And yours is a full page long. I read it and I thought, wow, how empowering it is to read this, you know, every day. It's like a beautiful affirmation. And maybe I think you were reading it twice a day. But it was, you know, it was interesting that you gave the exception to shoulds, which is that you said, you know, we should have a personal mission statement. So speak about that. It's kind of contradictory to the earlier stuff in your book.
Yeah. And so the better word is we need to have a mission statement. And I'll tell you why. It's your non-negotiables in life. It's what you'd fight for. It's who you are. If you're asking your question, who am I? It is your core values, your principles, your non-negotiables, what you'd fight for. And the flip side of that is what really makes you angry. The reason it makes you angry is because it's against your quote core values, or you see something in that other person that you want to fix in yourself. So your mission statement is how you hold your head up high and put your shoulders back. It's how you sleep better at night. By the way, I have written a book that is aspirational. My hope is that when I leave this earth, that someone will say that guy lived a legendary life. I certainly do not think I'm legendary. But I want to use the book as who I want to be, where do I want to go, and who do I want to serve? But I will never live up to it because I'm just a man and a human, and I'm as flawed as everybody else. But that mission statement that, by the way, I have gone back to reading it, and I am not kidding. It's because it's the man I want to be. It's gotcha. The man I want to show up to. And it's the human. It's who I am. If people want to know who I am, read that. That's who I want to be. And right. that's why it's so important.
Right. So that's interesting because it occurred to me when I was reading the book, it's like, I wonder how much of this is aspirational for you versus like living and breathing. And, you know, I
work it every day, but I am not the man in those pages because I'm just a man.
Right. Well, that's good. I think that's very humbling.
Yeah.
Or that shows rather a lot of humility on your part. And I think seems to me that to be coachable, to even listen to a podcast like this and think, I'm going to get some value out of it. I'm going to take some notes. There's some takeaways. I'm going to read that book. You have to have humility. If you don't have humility, then it's game over, basically.
It's game over. And don't worry, it's you're going to be humbled some way.
Yeah, exactly.
We all end up in the same spot, by the way, right. dead.
Right. Right. And it may not. And if it's before then, it might be not be a ditch, but it might be some, you know, someone wiping your ass or cleaning up after you, which is humbling or, you know, recovering.
Life's
going to
happen. Relationship's going to happen. Illness is going to happen. Yep, crazy exactly. things in politics. I mean, it's just don't take yourself so seriously and have some yep. fun. Lighten up yep. and have some fun.
Yep. Exactly. All right. Well, I think we're ready to wrap up. Any final thoughts you want to share with the audience?
Yeah. I mean, if you like about what we're saying, come join us at one of our executive men or entrepreneurial men's and women's retreats. Come check us out. Hang us, read the book, connect with ambitious driven people who want to move the ball forward, but also want to do business, life, relationships well. I mean, we're all wanting to be pros in those things. Come join us. Come hang out with us in the beautiful North Georgia mountains, or check out our community or our social media, or buy the book, man. Just come check us out. And here's to all of us building and living legendary lives.
Sounds great. All right, folks, you heard it from the man, Tommy Breedlove. And yeah, I had to ask him, by the way, and I'm just a PS, is that a real name? Like, or did you like take that on as like, because this really is aspirational too. And man, like some people say, like, we're given the name that we're destined to live with. And people have always asked me, like, Gold Hill, is that a real name? And actually, my grandfather's name was Goldberg, and he changed to Gold Hill many years ago.
Oh,
but,
wow.
Yeah, nice but story. Like Gold Hill is definitely my name, and I live by it. Breedlove is yours, and you do yours. Pick up a copy of his book. Pick up a copy of my book. They go really well together. One's a business coaching book. The other is a life coaching book, if you don't mind me categorizing you in that vein. Thanks for spending this 40 minutes or so with me.
It's been awesome. Legendary, my brother, and I'm so humbled and grateful to be here.
Awesome. All right, folks, you know the drill. If you like this show, give us a 5-star rating on your listening podcast app of choice. Maybe give us a good Google review wherever. Buy the book, share the episode, like us, and pay it forward. All right, thanks. This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.